Welcome to Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. The goal of Access Advocacy are to improve the lives of patients and caregivers who are dealing with the chronic illness of sickle cell disease. Today we're speaking again with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills. How's it going? I always want to call you Reverend Gordon.
Well, that's quite all right. I've been called many things, and Reverend Gordon's one of the better ones. So I am well this day. Glad to be back with you.
Oh, so happy to have you. We are thinking about what to do with it being Black History Month and all, and I thought, what better person could we have on the show to talk about it than you? So let's hear your thoughts about the significance of Black History Month and what we've got planned for today's show.
Well, that's a wonderful place for me to start. As an African American and a child of the African diaspora of multiple identities, I am always glad to speak about the people I love and the history, the legacy, and the now that we are living into. Black History Month, or the National African American History Month, as it was conceived of, is something that came about in large measure because Carter G. Woodson, a great black historian, I believe from Howard University, was pushing for Negroes or black folks to understand and know who they are, and then to take that out into the larger community of the United States, because there really is no United States history without African American history or black history in the context of this continent. So I love it. I live it. My family's been part of it, and I want to proclaim it from the mountaintops.
Well, one of the things you did for your congregation to commemorate this was you had Gerald C. Rivers come in and do a rendition of Dr. Martin Luther King's, I don't know if rendition is the word, channel Dr. Martin Luther King's speech on the drum major. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would be glad to. The drum major sermon or the drum major writing that Dr. King did first started in 1952 as a written piece. Dr. King pontificated about what it was to lead and to lead in a way that brings not only yourself forward, but others. It places the drum major or the rest of us in the position of becoming the servant that is the most esteemed, because if you love people, if you're in leadership, ultimately you've got to serve somebody. And so Dr. King, in his eloquence, uses biblical narrative and scripture to articulate the experience of sitting at the right hand of the Almighty, the left hand of the Almighty, but not that the position that you end up in is the important thing. It's the living, the lived experience of leading, guiding, sharing, giving of oneself for the greater good of community and others. So nobody like Dr. King ever, I don't think before, and we certainly haven't found another one like him since, but Gerald Rivers certainly channeled him at the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills, and I was glad to sit there and be captivated by the words of Dr. King.
One of the things that we want to first give gratitude to Gerald C. Rivers, because he did give us permission to play his recording of that particular piece. So let's all take a moment and prepare ourselves for this. Okay, here it is.
Yeah.
This morning, I would like to use as a subject from which to preach the drum major instinct. The drum major instinct. And our text for the morning is taken from the 10th chapter as recorded by St. Mark. Beginning with the 5th verse, we read these words. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came unto him, saying, Master, we would that thou shouldest do for us whatsoever we shall desire. And he said unto them, What would ye that I should do for you? And they said unto him, Grant unto us that we may sit one on thy right hand, and the other on the left hand of thy throne. But Jesus said unto them, Ye know not what ye ask. Can ye drink of the cup that I drink of? And with the baptism that I am baptized with, can you be baptized? And they said unto him, We can. And he said unto them, Ye shall indeed drink of the cup that I drink of, and with the baptism that I am baptized, withal shall ye be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give. It shall be given to those for whom it is prepared. And then Jesus goes on towards the end of that passage to say, So shall it not be among you, that he who is great among you shall be your servant, and he who is chiefest shall be servant of all. The setting is clear. James and John are making a specific request of the Master. For they had dreamed, as most Hebrews dreamed, of a coming king of Israel who would establish his kingdom on Mount Zion and in righteousness rule the world. And they thought of Jesus as this kind of king, and they were saying, Now, when you establish a kingdom, we want to sit one on your right hand and the other on the left hand of your throne. Now, very quickly, we would automatically condemn James and John. We would say they were selfish. Why would they make such a selfish request? But before we condemn them too quickly, let us look calmly and honestly at ourselves, and we will discover that we too have some of the same James and John qualities. That there is down within all of us a kind of instinct. We look calmly and honestly at ourselves, we will discover that we all want to be important. We all have the same basic desires for recognition, for importance, a desire for attention, a desire to be out front, a desire to lead the parade. And it is something that runs the whole gamut of life. Alfred Adler, the great psychoanalyst, contends that this real dominant impulse is the dominant impulse. Sigmund Freud used to contend that sex was the dominant impulse, but Adler came with a new argument saying that this quest for recognition, this desire for distinction, is something that runs the whole gamut of life. The real drum major instinct. You know, we begin early to ask life to grant us first place. Our first cry as a baby was a bid for attention. And all through childhood, the drum major instinct or impulse was a major obsession. Children ask life grant them first place, their little bundle of ego. And they have innately the real drum major impulse or drum major instinct. Now, you know, in adult life, we still have it, and we really never get by it. We like to do something good, and, you know, we like to be praised for it. Now, if you don't believe that, you just go on living life, and very soon you will discover that you like to be praised. Everybody likes it, as a matter of fact, even when they don't believe it, and even when they don't deserve it. Somehow, this warm glow we feel when we are praised or when our name is in print is something of the vitamin A to our egos. The only unhappy people about praise is when that praise is going too much towards somebody else. But everybody likes to be praised because of the real drum major instinct. Don't you know that a lot of the race problem grows out of the drum major instinct? A need that some people have to feel superior. A need that some people have to feel that they are first and to feel that their white skin ordained them to be first. Not only does it go into the struggle between races, it goes into the struggle between nations. And I would submit to you this morning that what is wrong in the world is that the nations of the world are caught up in a bitter and colossal contest for supremacy. If some doesn't happen to stop this trend, I'm sorely afraid that we aren't going to be here too many more years to talk about God or to talk about brotherhood. Because somebody's going to make the mistake through our senseless blundering of dropping a nuclear bomb, and then another one is going to drop. Don't let anybody fool you. This could happen within a matter of seconds. They have bombs right now that can destroy a city as big as New York with everybody wiped away and every building. And we can do the same thing to them. And this is where we're drifting. And we're drifting there because the nations of the world are caught up in the drum major instinct. Our nation must be first. Our nation must be supreme. Our nation must rule the world. I'm sad to say that the nation in which we live is the supreme culprit. And I'm going to continue to say it to America, because I love this country too much to see the drift that it has taken. God didn't call America to do what she's doing in the world now. God didn't call America to engage in senseless, unjust wars around the world. We've committed more war crimes almost than any nation, and I'm going to continue to say it. We won't stop it because of our pride and our arrogance as a nation. The God that I worship has a way of even putting nations in that place. The God that I worship, the God of the Old Testament, used to say, "Don't play with me, Israel. Don't play with me, Babylon. Be still and know that I'm God. And if you don't stop your reckless course in this world, I'll rise up and break the backbone of your power." And that could happen to America. Every now and then I go back and read Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. And then I come back and look at America, and I say to myself, the parallels are frightening. The perverted use of the drum major instinct. But let me rush on to my conclusion so we could see what Jesus was really saying. What is the answer that Jesus gave these men? One would have thought that Jesus would have said, "You're selfish, you're out of your place. Why would you raise such a question?" But that isn't what Jesus did. He did something altogether different. He said in substance, "Oh, I see. You want to be first? You want to be great? You want to be important? You want to be significant? Well, you ought to be. If you are to be my disciples, you must be." But he reordered priorities. He said, "Yes, don't give up this instinct. It's a good instinct if you use it right. It's a good instinct if you don't distort it and pervert it. Keep feeling the need for being important. Keep feeling the need for being first. But I want you to be first in love. I want you to be first in moral excellence. I want you to be first in generosity. That is what I want you to do. And he transformed the situation by giving a new norm of greatness. And you know how he said it? He said, "Now, brethren, I can't give you greatness. And really, I can't make you first." This is what Jesus said to James and John. You must earn it. True greatness comes not by favoritism, but by fitness. The right hand and the left are not mine to give. They shall be given to those who are prepared. And so Jesus gave a new norm of greatness. You want to be important? Wonderful. You want to be recognized? Wonderful. You want to be great? Wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's your definition of greatness. This morning, the thing that I like about it is by giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your verb and your subject agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to understand the second theory of thermodynamics to serve. You just need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love. Every now and then, we all think about what is life's final common denominator, that thing we call death. We all think about it, and every now and then I think about my own death. I think about my own funeral, and I wonder what it is that I would want said if any of you are around here when I have to meet my day. I don't want a long funeral. And if you get somebody to deliver the eulogy, tell them not to talk too long. Tell them not to mention that I have a Nobel Peace Prize. That isn't important. Tell them not to mention that I have 300 or 400 other awards. That's not important. Tell them not to mention where I went to school. On that day, I would like for somebody to be able to say that Martin Luther King Jr. tried to love somebody. I want them to be able to say that I did try in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want them to be able to say that I did try in my life to visit those who were in prison. I want them to say that I tried to be right on the war question. I want them to say that I tried to love and serve humanity. I won't have any money to leave behind. I won't have the fine and luxurious things of life to leave behind, but I just want to leave a committed life. And that's all I want to say. If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word or song, if I can show somebody he's traveling wrong, then my living will not be in vain. If I can do my duty as a Christian ought, if I can bring salvation to a world once wrought, if I can spread the message as the Master taught, then my living will not be in vain. Yes, Jesus, I want to be on your right or your left side, but not for any selfish reasons. I want to be on your right or your left side, not in terms of some political ambition or kingdom, but I just want to be there in love and in justice and in truth and in commitment to others so that we can make of this old world a new world.
You've just heard Gerald C. Rivers channeling the voice of Dr. King with his rendition of the Drum Major Sermon. This is Access Advocacy, and this is Adrienne Shapiro. And once again, we're speaking with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills. One of the other really interesting things is that this speech isn't as well, a sermon isn't as well known as some of his others, but the deep dive into the psychology behind motivation and the acceptance was something that I hadn't really thought about. I mean, it was a theme in many of his sermons, but really in particular this one, where he really talks about that thing of what are you leading with and what that means. So can you give us some of your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. And truly this sermon and its implications should be shared more widely. I am aware that the drum major instincts actually was penned by a man named J. Wallace Hamilton, a white liberal preacher, Methodist preacher, but King took it and reworked it, and that's the sermon we end up with. So that 1952 point was where Wallace must have shared it with King. So my mind, you know, you get a little long in the tooth, your mind can forget things. So I wanted to give that to your listeners. But Dr. King's able to look at life essentially as a journey of transformation of our egos, and he's encouraging the listener to redirect themselves away from the selfishness of the ego, you know, because the I got to have, to seek a place where our competitive goals are set aside, and through spiritual growth and service to others, we become our best selves. And Dr. King, he delivers, because I don't know if anyone who's conscious or in a place where they can receive wisdom from another could sit and listen or read this sermon and not come to understand, in order for me to be my best self, I've got to put somebody else's needs ahead of my own. And certainly in this materialistic world that we live in a society where the thoughts and deeds of those who have wealth are more important than people like yourself, Adrian, or the doctors, or the workers in the harshest and most difficult places who don't receive the accolades, we've got to transform ourselves and then the society into one where everybody is is valued and everybody can be of service. I think that's one of the key points in the sermon. He said, you don't have to have a college degree. You don't have to be able to sing like Mahalia. You just have to have a desire to serve somebody, i.e. love somebody. And this is needed more than ever.
Well, those are really certainly powerful words from you, Reverend Gordon. This is Access Advocacy, and we'll be back with Reverend Gordon to speak some more about Black History Month. This is Access Advocacy on thepowerofvoices.com. Welcome back. So, Reverend Gordon, I learned something that I didn't know, and that was about the song We Shall Overcome. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
I certainly would be glad to. Along my many journeys in ministry, I served the Community Church of New York, and we had a famous member of the congregation, a man by the name of Pete Seeger. Some of your listeners may know Pete Seeger. And Pete Seeger is one of those important people from what we might think of as a civil rights era, but And that's where the song gets its most prominent or recognizable location. But Pete Seeger, when he writes the song, he's writing it about unions and the struggle for laborers and the rights of people to stand up. And so it's a song that's timeless. It's a song that helped with the labor union strife that was ongoing in this nation in the years, bygone years, I guess, in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And it's a song that captivated the civil rights movement and became an anthem for those in the struggle for freedom.
Yes, and as the church was singing it, the congregation, we substituted, rather than saying someday, we were singing today. And the thing that was so striking is that all of us felt or feel that the song is so timely and important with everything that we're facing today. So we're going to hear a recording of that. We Shall Overcome.
We shall overcome one day. We shall overcome the Lord one day. Yeah, 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 yeah. If in our heart we do believe, Lord, Lord, one day, we shall all have peace one day. We shall all have peace one day. We shall all have peace, Lord, Lord, one day. We shall all be free one day, Lord. We shall all be free, Lord, one day. Lord, Lord, if in our heart, yeah, I do believe, Lord, we shall be free, Lord, one day.
This is Access Advocacy, and this is Adrienne Shapiro. And once again, we're speaking with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills. I didn't realize that Precious Lord was Dr. King's favorite song.
Yeah, I don't know if it was in reading text about Dr. King or it was in an interview that I heard with Ralph Abernathy or Andrew Young. May have been when I was with Andrew Young at some point. Andrew Young, brilliant ambassador and mayor of Atlanta and statesman, really. I got to share some time with him in New York once, and so somewhere along the way, it came to my mind that Dr. King loved this song. In fact, I think even in one of the movies about Dr. King's life, or maybe it was in Selma, he's on the phone with, I believe, one of the great jazz greats and asked her to please sing it for him. So it's It's one of those amazing hymns, Negro spirituals, and just something that if you allow it to take hold of you, you'll understand where this man who was in the midst of a struggle, not just for his people, but for his own life, why it would be so meaningful. So it's a great one. I hope the audience gets to enjoy it.
In the memory of my father, Reverend C.L. Franklin, and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, I'd like to sing one of his favorites, a song that he'd always request, a song with long, strong arms that rocked him in the cradle of ages. Precious Lord, take my
This is Access Advocacy. We're speaking with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills. What's your favorite song?
You know, that's an interesting question. Isn't that something? You know what? It's funny. I never thought about that. I probably would go with God Bless You. You Make Me Feel Brand New. That's a stylistic song, isn't it?
Oh, God, he's got the biggest smile. I think we're going to have to play that. I think we're going to play it.
You know what? That's what every human being, I've never had a human encounter, even if it went rough, that didn't inform and grow me. So, you know, humans light the fire in me.
Find the words, my love, to tell you how I feel, my love. Mere words could not explain. Precious love, you held my life within. Created everything I am, taught me how to live again.
Only you care when I needed a friend, believed in.
Without you, life has no meaning.
Today we're speaking again with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills. This is Access Advocacy. I am learning so much in our conversation today. I should have known, I guess, about your involvement or your relationship with so many people who were active in the civil rights movement, especially given your time in New York. Can you give us a little bit more about your life there and how it came to be that you were interacting with the civil rights community?
I think I'm just one of those children of God. I believe we all, that's my own theology, my personal theology, we're all children of God, and that I was blessed to be born into a family that was active. My parents were lawyers in the Harlem community. My dad practiced till he was 93, and my mother until she was 88, practiced law in Harlem. When I was a boy, their office was next to the Apollo Theater, and I used to be in the window just looking, and Red Fox or Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, and others would be walking past the Apollo or going in, and I'd run down on the street to say hi to them. But I guess what made it possible for me to have access to some of these people and particularly their works was that my dad had gone to Lincoln University, which I believe, I attended Lincoln myself, is the oldest college for black people in the United States, founded by the Presbyterian Church, Ashman Institute, and then they changed it to Lincoln after the president was killed. So my father was a classmate of Langston Hughes and Thurgood Marshall and a who's who of black America, even the first president of Nigeria and the first president of Ghana were there at Lincoln. Kwame Nkrumah and Ezekwe. So my father, who was an active man in the community, ran for state assembly and for Congress and school board. He was always running for something. Run, Joe, run, we used to say. He knew all these folks. And thankfully, I was able to make the acquaintance of a good number of people. And through my mother and father's legacy, I've been an active person for many years. I was in D.C. I worked for our Faith in Action office in Washington, D.C., and I learned under Reverend Meg Riley, and then I went back to New York and got actively involved in New York politics. And David Dinkins, the first black mayor of the city of New York, lived on my block. I had known him and his family. Percy Sutton, the borough president, the founder of Inner City Broadcasting, which was the first black radio stations in the city of New York, were our friends. And so I just was at the right place at the right time, and I was always a child that would sit by my mother and father's feet when the company would be over, and I'd listen. I'd listen. I wanted to know the stories of African Americans. I'm half West Indian, so the West Indians, Jamaicans have contributed significantly to the American story. And just to learn and grow my soul, grow my spirit, grow my mind so I could be of service to somebody, because my parents are my idols and they lived lives of service. And that's how I was raised. I was weaned on that. We never got rich, but our lives have been so full, and that's what it's all about for me. I wish I could find the book. Langston Hughes was at the house one day, and he signed the book to me or one of my siblings, and I remember each one of us wanted that book from Uncle Langston. So it's been a blessed life. And I'm not done yet.
No, you're not done. I'm so happy to have you here on the West Coast. I think it was the East Coast loss, but certainly the West Coast gain. And tell us take a moment to talk to us a little bit about some of the work that you're doing politically or outreach that you're doing and trying to put in place here in Verdugo Hills.
Well, this is really exciting, Adrian, and thanks so much for giving me an opportunity to just speak a little bit about this. the Glendale community, La Crescenta, has an interesting history, and it's a human tale. It's got good, it's got bad, and it's got everything in between. And just recently, we hosted at the church there in Verdugo Hills the first Glendale ACLU meeting, and so we had the first gathering of those who want to find a way to get the ACLU active in the life of what goes on in our community, whether it's fighting or asking or demanding for a police review board that's based on citizens' oversight of the police, or whether or not it's that the city of Glendale be a sanctuary city so that our brothers and sisters who have come from other places won't be hunted down in our community, or whatever it is. That's one of the important things. It's at the very top of the Unitarian Universalist creed that the inherent worth and dignity of every human being be upheld. And so whether it's activism with ACLU or with CLU, Clergy and Laity United for Economic Justice, I'm on a dedicated journey towards lifting up that which has been ignored or given the short shrift. I want justice for everybody, every man, woman, and child, every gender, every race, every creed. And so as long as I have breath, that's what I'm going to do. And thankfully, the Los Angeles County congregations of Unitarian Universalists have created Justice LA, JUSTICELA, like us on Facebook, please. We've created an organization to gather the 14 congregations together so that our voice can be made stronger in this community. And I'm active with those folks. I'm dedicated to that. Our congregation was there for that first meeting over a year ago. And so we're on our way towards the promised land. I hope I get there with everybody, but I know the long arc of justice. And Dr. King borrowed that phrase from a Unitarian minister, Theodore Parker. The arc of the moral universe is bending towards justice, and we're on our way.
Wow. Well, if it's okay, I'm going to give out your website address along with your Facebook. You can find out what's going on at the Universalist Unitarian Church of Verdugo Hills by going to www.uuverdugohills.org. And there's a lot going on over there.
Oh, Adrian, you're a big part of it. We love having you with us, and we look forward to working with you and doing great things together.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you again for lending your voice and your wisdom and your history to us on this show.
You are very welcome. Invite me back again.
Oh, yes, we will. And once again, we've had the great pleasure and honor of speaking with Reverend Gordon Clay Bailey of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Verdugo Hills. Thank you, and you know we'll have you back. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will be right back on Access Advocacy.
Welcome back. I'm Adrian Shapiro on Access Advocacy. As I was listening to Gerald Rivers channel Dr. King's words, I thought about humanity and how we many, many times say that those of us in the sickle cell community want to be treated with humanity. That we want the caregivers and the doctors and nurses and social workers and even the intake clerks to treat us with humanity. I thought about how we also have to treat them with humanity. That when we hear them say things to us like drug seeker or frequent flyer or sickler, we have to think about where they heard those words and
why they're using those words. And we have to take it in and try to help them find their humanity by extending our humanity to them. We have to say things like, please don't use the word sickler. I am a person living with sickle cell. We have to say things like, please don't use the term frequent flyers, because I am here in the hospital getting care from you because I have a chronic illness which causes me to be in the hospital often. We don't feel like saying those words sometimes because we've been there for hours and hours and we're tired of the eye rolling and the cheek sucking and whatever else it is that they're doing. But if we want to be treated with humanity, we have to reach out and treat them with humanity. That's it for this week. We want to thank you so much for listening in. But before we go, I wanted to let you know that you can learn more about our organization on our website, accessadvocacy.org, or on the Access Advocacy Facebook page, or follow us on Twitter. That's AXISAdvocacy.org. Join us again next Tuesday on thepowerofvoices.com at noon Pacific, or listen anytime on demand at accessadvocacy.org. You'll find all our programs there. I'm Adrienne Shapiro. Thank you for listening.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my carry on. It's been a long